We're joined this morning by John Feinstein. The book is called The Legends Club. Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, and Jim Valvano, and epic college basketball rivalry. Just one thing, John, before we continue any further, I'm going to refer to him as Coach K from this point forward. I can't read his name and say it at the same time. I can do many things in life, but that's one thing I have yet to master.
It's funny, when I was doing my first book, A Season on the Brink, 30 years ago, with Bob Knight, and as you know, Krzyzewski played for Knight for 4 years and coached under him for a year, and he would always call him Mike Krzyzewski. And I finally said to him, "Do you realize you're mispronouncing his name? It's Krzyzewski." And he said, "It's not my fault if he doesn't pronounce his name right. So don't feel bad about calling him Coach K."
Well, isn't that a thing about coaches? It's their way or the highway for the most part, right?
That's true. They are life's ultimate control freaks and the last of the great dictators, too.
Well, let's talk about these three coaches. And a little bit, when I'm looking at this book, in a sense, it's for you, it's kind of a lifetime in the making, this book, because you really are a part of this story, aren't you?
Yeah, you're exactly right. As I write in the introduction, in a way, this book started for me when I was in college, the first time I met Dean Smith, which I hate to admit was 40 years ago, when I was a junior at Duke. And Carolina had just crushed Duke, as they always did in those days. And I introduced myself to him in the locker room because I was writing a column about a Duke player named Tate Armstrong, who actually ended up playing on Dean's Olympic team that year. He's a very good player. But when I introduced myself and said I was from the Duke student newspaper, he said, "Oh, I know who you are. I read your column last month saying that Bill Foster, who was Duke's coach then, should model his program after ours. I thought it was very fair, for someone from Duke," which kind of became a running joke between he and I for the next 35 years. But I was stunned that Dean Smith had read something I had written in the Duke student newspaper, and later found out that they subscribed to all the student newspapers in the ACC because Dean never missed a detail. And then I met Valvano when he was at Iona and Krzyzewski when he was at Army. And as I've said to people, I wasn't born to write this book, but I lived it because I was covering the ACC for the Washington Post in the 1980s and spent hours and hours with Valvano and Krzyzewski, and not as much time with Dean because he was much more reticent about spending time with the media, but probably more time with him than anybody else in the media over the course of those 35 years that I knew him.
Well, being sort of the storyteller, then you're the one that can kind of chronicle this. But how do you recall all of this?
Well, I was very fortunate in a number of ways, Bruce. Number one, I am a hoarder, much to my wife's chagrin. But I had all of my tapes and notes from every time I ever interviewed any of the three of them still in my basement. Number two, I do have a very good memory. I can remember a lot of things that took place a long time ago. I don't always remember to stop and pick things up at the grocery store on the way home, but I remember things that happened in the 70s and 80s. And third, even though I could not talk to Dean or Jim had passed away, and of course Dean was in the last stages of dementia when I was researching this book, and then passed away 13 months ago. Both wives, Pam Valvano and Linnea Smith, were great with me, gave me time, told me stories, and so did Jim's two brothers, Nick and Bob, and I spent much time with Krzyzewski, of course. So that allowed me to not only go back to those days in the 80s, but also allowed me to learn new things about what had happened in the ensuing years.
What kind of insight do you get from a family member who in the deepest, quietest moments can kind of know that person better than anybody?
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples. Linnea Smith told me a story because I didn't understand just what good friends Dean Smith and Jim Valvano were. I knew that Mike and Jim had become very close toward the end of Jim's life because Mike visited him in Duke Hospital every day the last couple of months when he was there dying of cancer. But I didn't know how close Dean and Jim were, and she told me that Jim's life, he was asked by George Steinbrenner to come and throw out a first pitch at Yankee Stadium on opening day in April of 1993. By then he was too sick to travel. And he called Dean and asked Dean if he would go in his place because he knew Dean was a Yankee fan too, like Jim had been for his entire life. And Dean said, "I'd be honored to go." And he went and threw out the first pitch. And very rare for Dean to volunteer to appear in public to do anything other than coach basketball. But Linnea told me that in their house, there are all these pictures of Dean with kids and grandkids and former players and coaches. There's only one picture in the whole house that's just Dean, and it's him throwing out that first pitch. And that was an insight that I clearly couldn't have gotten from anybody but Dean's wife. Pam Valvano told me that, among many other things, that Jim was always great at hiding how much he hated losing. He always did it with humor. He would make fun of himself. He would make fun of his team, mostly himself. But she told me that he would come home after putting that face on and brood for days after a loss, to the point where she finally said to him, "You can't schedule a tough team before Christmas, because whenever they would lose a game before Christmas, on Christmas morning, she couldn't get them to come downstairs to open presents with their daughters." So, again, that's the kind of thing you can't get from anybody but a wife.
Yeah, the basketball consumes them for their careers. Yeah. And, you know, we wonder sometimes these guys, nowadays they get quite a bit of, compensation for it. But what is it that drives them to actually get to this point and want to be a coach of a major college program?
Well, I think, as with anybody who's great at anything in any walk of life, there is a drive, there is a competitive streak, and where exactly it comes from, I think, is different in everybody. Dean Smith was a coach's son. His dad coached the first integrated high school team in Emporia, Kansas, to compete in the Kansas State High School Championships. He was always very proud of that, and wanted to follow in his father's footsteps. Valvano, also a coach's son, and neither of them a great player. Dean played on great teams at Kansas, but didn't play. He was the 12th man. Valvano was a good player on players at Rutgers, on teams at Rutgers, but not a great player, and wanted to be a great coach. His dream was always to cut down the final net, and sadly and ironically, once he did that in 1983, he lost a little bit of his drive. He wasn't as driven as either Krzyzewski or Dean Smith. Krzyzewski was a kid from Chicago. His dad was an elevator operator. His mother was a cleaning lady. She worked at the Chicago Athletic Club, and he was the first person in his family to go to college. Went to West Point, and was kind of a natural leader, which is why West Point was a good place for him. And wanted to coach when he got out of the Army, and was driven to be great the way the other two were too.
We're talking today with John Feinstein. The book is called The Legends Club, with Dean Smith, Coach K, Jim Valvano. Usually when you think of a rivalry, it's two.
Right.
You got three. What kind of a dynamic does that create? And maybe take this, how this whole thing started.
Yeah, this was unique, because you have never, ever, before or since, had a circumstance where you had three iconic coaches in the same, not only in the same league, but in the same community, coaching within 25 miles of one another. Duke and North Carolina are 10 miles apart, and they're each about 20 to 25 miles away from NC State. And they're the same media market. All the TV and radio stations and newspapers that cover Duke cover Carolina and cover NC State. And alumni from the three schools live and work amongst each other every single day. And Dean was an iconic figure already in the state when Jim and Mike came there in 1980. Mike had been at Army, Jim had been at Iona. And as Mike put it, these are his words, "When we landed from New York, if we had landed instead from Mars, we could not have understood less how iconic a figure Dean Smith already was in the state." And they both, had to deal with that. And Valvano told the story about going to get his hair cut for the first time on the NC State campus. And the barber said to him, "Are you the fellow who replaced old Norman Sloan as basketball coach?" And he said, "Yes." And the barber said, "Well, I hope you have more luck around here than old Norman did." And Valvano said, "Didn't Norman Sloan win a national championship? Didn't he go 27-0 one year?" And the barber said, "Yeah, but just imagine what old Dean Smith could have done with that team." And that's the kind of thing that they were both up against from the start. And so while they were both competing with Dean, who was the top of the mountain, they were also competing with each other, because they were the same age, 11 months apart, same coaching experiences and background, similar at least, both the father of three daughters, so very competitive with one another while they were trying to compete with Dean.
So you have that dynamic of sort of sibling rivalry, in a sense, mm-hmm. to a parent or a father.
And it was very intense, and you're not competitive with there's no one you're more competitive with than your brother.
Right.
And it was very, and Dean and Mike in particular did not get along early on. There was a lot of hostility and antagonism. Dean didn't feel Mike showed the proper respect for what he and his players had accomplished, and that was always important to Dean, showing respect for his players' accomplishments. And Mike was like, I'm not going to be intimidated just because you're Dean Smith. So he was very in his face, and it created some very, let's say, awkward circumstances.
Well, let's talk about getting the players, the recruiting process. You're talking about a similar region, so what's the selling point for bringing a student to your particular school?
Well, the interesting thing is Duke and Carolina always recruited against each other. NC State, not as much. NC State was, even though it's changed since then, was more of an agricultural school and a science school, whereas Duke and Carolina were liberal arts schools. So they didn't butt up against NC State in recruiting that often. On occasion, David Henderson, who was a key player on Duke's 1986 team, Krzyzewski's first Final Four team, was recruited by NC State and by Carolina and by Duke. But mostly it was Duke versus Carolina, and of course in the beginning, Dean was completely in control. I mean, people used to say he didn't recruit, he selected, because so many great players wanted to go to Carolina. And just think about the players there in the early 1980s, James Worthy, Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, Brad Daugherty, Kenny Smith, I mean, the list went on. But as Krzyzewski began to make inroads, the first really good players he recruited were not players he recruited directly against Carolina. Johnny Dawkins, Mark Gallery, Jay Billison. Henderson was recruited by Carolina. He was the exception. But the big turning point was Danny Ferry, who was a kid from Annapolis, played for the immortal Morgan Wooten at DeMatha High School. Morgan had sent several players to Carolina. But Ferry decided he wanted to go to Duke. He liked Coach K's youth. And he loved Johnny Dawkins. Dawkins also grew up in the D.C. area. And as Danny said, I thought Johnny Dawkins was cool. And he wanted to play with Johnny Dawkins, just as players wanted to play with Michael Jordan. And so he went to Duke, and that was a big turning point. Because after that, Krzyzewski was in the game, so to speak. And he got Grant Hill, who Carolina wanted, and Christian Laettner, who Carolina wanted, and Bobby Hurley, who Carolina wanted. And that's when the tables really began to turn so that he was on equal footing with Dean Smith.
There's a picture in there where you refer to, look at these forced smiles. Was there really animosity? Was it a friendly rivalry? What kind
of,
how intense?
There was genuine animosity early on. There was a famous game in 1984 in Cameron Indoor Stadium when Duke was first getting good. And there was a moment in the game where Dean was convinced that the scorer's table had not alerted the officials to a substitute. He wanted to get in the game, and he ran down, and he tried to hit the horn to for a sub. And instead, he hit the scoreboard and gave his team 10 extra points. And Krzyzewski came down and started screaming at the officials, you got to give him a technical. He can't be messing around with the scorer's table. And they didn't. And Carolina won a close game. And after the game, Krzyzewski said, there's a double standard in this league. There's one for Dean Smith, and there's one for the rest of us. And, of course, Dean was infuriated by that because he saw that as not giving his players the proper credit for being as good as they were. The refs win the games for you. Of course, the great irony now is that everybody in the ACC says that about Duke and about Krzyzewski. And because of that change, when Mike kind of ascended and became Dean, especially after Dean retired, he came to understand better why Dean did some of the things he did and came to have a lot more respect and affection for him as a result. But early on, there was no love lost at all between the two of them. They were constantly bickering off the court and obviously competing on it.
He was able to sort of feel the weight of the crown, what it was like to wear the crown and what it meant, I guess.
Exactly right. And we used to joke about it because he at one point had said to his assistants during a game, if I ever start to act like him, just get a gun and shoot me. And years later, some of us who knew him well, he would do certain things that reminded us of Dean. And I would call him on occasion and just leave a message saying, we're rounding up the guns. Initially, he didn't take it that well. I can't repeat his responses on the air. But eventually, he came to understand that being like Dean Smith was a good thing.
Now, he is, at this current time, about the age, I think, when Dean Smith retired, if I was looking at
He's 3 years older, actually.
Okay.
He's 69. Dean was 66.
Okay. How much longer do you think he will continue on?
He will go at least through next season because they should be very good again next year. And if they were to win another title and he would have just turned 70, I could see him walking away then, but I don't think it's guaranteed. He's healthy now. He's had some health issues, as you know, in the past. But he's healthy. He's enjoying coaching as much as he ever has. He's loved coaching this team for all their struggles because he loves the way the players have responded to some of the adversity with injuries and things that they've had. So I could see him going another 3 years, perhaps, after this one.
Why does he look so... You know, Dean Smith always looked old. Why does Mike not look that old?
He has this magic touch where his hair won't turn gray. And I said, when I was doing the book, I said to his wife, Mickey, I said, come on, he's got to color his hair. And she said, I swear to you, John, he does not color his hair. I would know if he did. I would smell it. He's never colored his hair. Somehow he's 69. His hair's still black.
Wow. And, of course, this book is set in a time... It's quite different now, the way basketball is. And, you know, you talked about the teams. You're recruiting players now just for one season and hope to take as much advantage of that player as possible. So it's kind of a bygone era.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because somebody asked me how Dean Smith would have reacted to the one and done. And my answer was very badly because he liked to develop his players as people as well as basketball players and like to have close relationships with them. And when you only coach someone for 1 year, that's hard to do. And Krzyzewski fought it for a long time, wouldn't recruit one-and-done players for a while, finally started recruiting them, but really kicking and screaming. And it was only after the 2014 season when he had Jabari Parker, who was a one-and-done second pick in the NBA draft, and they lost to Mercer in the first round of the NCAA tournament, that he said, okay, if I'm going to recruit these guys, I have to coach them enthusiastically. I can't be holding my nose saying, okay, I'll deal with it because I have to. And you saw what happened last year. He had three kids who ended up being one and dones, and they won the national championship.
Where do we find the same enjoyment as a fan that we found during that era today?
That's a great question. I mean, it is very different because you can't get attached to players the way you did in the old days. You know, I remember when Grant Hill played at Duke, they were in the Final Four 3 years out of four. And there were people who felt like, you know, Grant Hill was an adopted son because they saw him on television so much over that four-year period. And he was such a great kid, too. But it isn't the same when players just kind of come through. And I see people refer to some one-and-done guys as alumni. You know, Kyrie Irving is a Duke alumni. He played 11 games. And it's hard for me as a fan to wrap my head around the fact that I should be enthusiastic about these guys who I know will never graduate from college.
Right. And we can also talk about how that hurts the NBA in a sense, but they won't admit it.
Right, because the kids aren't ready.
Right. And you
exactly.
Of course, now thanks to technology, we can go back on YouTube and watch highlights from this era, see these games that if you were too young to remember or you just read about it, you can actually see it and be amazed at the uniforms that they used to wear back in those days, too.
They were a lot different, weren't they? The thing that I was speaking at a bookstore in Chapel Hill last night because I'm obviously on tour for the book, and I said, how many people in here have seen Jim Valvano's ESPY speech? And I think there are about 200 people in the room. I think just about every hand went up. So you're right, people do go into the past, and that speech that he gave keeps him alive in many ways among today's basketball fans, particularly at NC State.
Right. Well, people maybe just know him for the foundation and what became about that than either just that or what he was as a coach. The book is called The Legends Club, Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, and Jim Valvano, and the epic college basketball rivalry. Our guest today, John Feinstein. John, thanks for sharing a bit of your day with us. Appreciate it.
Bruce, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.